welcome you to another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the bat, at C70 on Twitter. With me is Tara Wellman from Bird Seeds and Birds on the Black, and Tara Wellman on Twitter. Much more fun things to talk about this week than last week's depressing future of Adam Wainwright conversation and the fact that the offense couldn't actually hit. The offense is finally kind of, sort of, clicking. I don't know about Clay. Well, it's better than it was. Let's put it that way. We have some more fun stuff to talk about, and we're going to start with the good stuff. So that there are a few things that are still a little bit problematic, but we'll put those off, and we'll talk a little bit about Jack Flaherty, who came up to, you know, is pitching his second start in this mix of Adam Wainwright going on the DL and Carlos Martinez staying on the DL much longer than just one start. Which is something we ought to probably also talk about. But comes up today and pitches. And this is the Jack Flaherty that everybody's been talking about. And we've seen flashes of that to some degree. But to see Flaherty go and strike out 13 batters, tying a Cardinal record for rookies, going into the eighth and doing so, this is what the buzz is about.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason that he and Alex Reyes were the guys that were most sought after when we were looking at an offseason where the Cardinals were willing to trade some pieces. I mean, this is a kid that has been showcasing some of that talent for a while now, and I think that he got wind of what Alex Reyes, or maybe when Alex got back to the clubhouse today, he reminded him, friendly reminder that he struck out 13 last night. So Jack Flaherty maybe felt a little bit of added pressure to go out and match that to just continue this run of incredible young Cardinals pitching that keeps us all talking. I mean, it's always a challenge to get all those young superstars in a rotation at the same time. Just ask the Mets. But man, when you see what these guys are capable of with Alex Reyes on Saturday night in Springfield and then Jack Flaherty today, I throw Jordan Hicks into the mix just because, I mean, we're talking about young superstar pitchers, and it's not surprising why the Cardinals have been really high on the pitching that they have coming up through the system. I don't know that we expected to see it all sort of come together so early, or quite so soon, but it's definitely going to be hard to keep either one of those guys, Flaherty or Reyes, out of the rotation given the way that they're pitching right now.
Which is absolutely true. Unfortunately, I don't think anybody's really excited about going to a six-man rotation, especially when you've got all these interesting arms that you want to see as much as you can. And when everybody's healthy, and that's, you know, knock on wood, hopefully not too far off, maybe by the end of the month, you could have a rotation of Carlos Martinez, Alex Reyes, Luke Weaver, Miles Mikolas, and Michael Wacha, and still not have room for Jack Flaherty. This is not a situation like we had earlier in the year where you had Adam Wainwright, who kind of needed to be in that rotation and was pitching okay, and then he wasn't, but he still had that veteran, you know, contract and all that kind of stuff. Every single one of these guys, especially with the recent turnarounds by Weaver and Wacha, is worthy of that spot. It's not an easy thing to say, you know, for a while there it looked like, okay, maybe Luke Weaver's going to struggle a little bit and maybe they can send him down. Now he's put up, you know, I don't remember how many scoreless innings for him. I mean, he's put a really good run together. And so that's starting to look a little less and less likely. So how do they do this? I mean, this is an organization that is always path of least resistance. Don't lose a prospect. Don't lose an asset unless you just have to. All that kind of stuff. But like you said, watching Jack Flaherty, if he pitches, you know, anything like this the next time around, and he's already got 1-9 strikeout game this year, it's not like this was just a complete fluke. It becomes difficult not to see John Mozeliak pull a trade to me. let's put it this way, John Mozeliak and Mike Gersh should make a trade, probably. Doesn't mean that they will. because it feels like even if you trade one of these guys off, there's still some depth in the organization that, you know, nobody even talks about Austin Gomber, the man that got to come up and sit on the bench for 5 days. I mean,
I wouldn't say nobody talks about Austin Gomber. Yeah. Have you met Joe?
Yeah. Nobody in the organization seems to talk about Austin Gomber, which is crazy because, I mean, I haven't looked at his numbers this year. And obviously, they're not going to be Reyes and Flaherty level, but he's good. He's very good. And he's a lefty. People should be falling all over themselves to get a look at Austin Gomber. And, you know, the Cardinals have so much pitching that he doesn't even pitch when he gets to make it to the major league. So, It feels like the Cardinals should be looking to, I'm not saying give one of these away, but should be able to maximize an asset, doesn't it? I mean, because aren't we running the risk of some people just kind of withering away if they're spending all their summer in Memphis?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that's been one of my consistent criticisms of the way this organization handles prospects and disclaimer. I'm not suggesting they just start releasing guys. Just to be clear, John Mozeliak. But what I am suggesting is that I've thought at times that, and we've talked about this at length with a number of different prospects, Carson Kelly being one of them, that you sort of see them coming up through the system with this target on their back as the next great Cardinals kid, and then there's nowhere for them to play at the major league level, and rather than trading off major league talent, because John Mozeliak doesn't like to trade major league talent, they just sit in the minor leagues until their development is stunted, because, you know, there's only so much you can do when you're not facing a higher level of competition, or when they start to show signs of maybe not living up to those expectations, and then you've missed that perfect window for utilizing them as either major league talent or as, trade bait, as currency in getting something that you do need in the system. So, I think you look at those guys that the Cardinals have in the rotation right now. The one that seems to stand out is Michael Wacha, as a guy that has been mentioned in a lot of trade scenarios. I think, you know, Luke Weaver's kind of on that table as well, but maybe not so much after his resurgence and the fact that he is young and he does sort of fit in with that group. But there is Austin Gomber. There's Ryan Helsley. There are other guys in this organization that can carry the torch. If you give Alex Reyes and Jack Flaherty a chance at the same time, you know, there's always a risk putting that much youth and that much inexperience in a rotation without kind of that veteran anchor, if you will. So, you know, if you look at a rotation that's Carlos Martinez and Miles Michaelis and Alex Reyes and Luke Weaver and Jack Flaherty, there's a lot of unknowns to how those guys are going to handle situations or what is going to happen over the course of the remainder of the season. And that's all a reason to see value in someone like Michael Wacha, who suddenly has become the veteran of that staff, yeah. Which is weird. but I don't know. I think that they have to, the option to trade one of those guys not named Martinez, Reyes, or Flaherty has to be on the table, because I don't know how you can have that sort of talent in your organization and not use it for, you know, to generate wins at the major league level.
Absolutely. I mean, it's nice that Memphis won the PCL last year, but the Cardinals missed the playoffs. And then when it all boils down to it, you want success at the minor league level, but they're there to feed the major league team. And you're right. I mean, it was interesting that somebody put out the tweet this week that, with Carlos Martinez out, you know, Michael Wacha had like 150 something career starts, and like the next guy in the rotation had like 15 or 20.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the grizzled veteran, especially until Martinez returns. So you're right. There is that. You do need somebody that's been there. You know, but, you know, then again, I don't know. I mean, we can point out the problems. We can't tell you what the solution is, because I don't think anybody wants to see Luke Weaver going to pitch for Baltimore or whoever that may be trading to. Nobody wants to see Michael Walker not pitching in the Cardinal Red. That's not what you'd want, and normally you wouldn't have to worry about that. But with you have 6, 7, 8, 9 guys that are either going to be able to pitch in the major leagues now or within the next few months or at least in the next year, you can't hold on to all those guys. I don't know what the answer is, but I do think that it really kind of have to come sooner rather than later, assuming that Carlos Martinez is healthy. Now, the Cardinals kind of mentioned this week that I think the original mission was they did another exam and they were kind of inconclusive, but I think the final one was he looks better, start to begin a throwing program and might be back in 10 to 14 days, which it's the Cardinals and injuries, you take it for what it's worth. But, you know, if that's the case, then hey, that's pretty good. I mean, it's not as great as we thought, but it's still, like I said, puts Martinez back by the end of the year, or end of the month. What do you think? I mean, is this reasonable, or is this kind of one of those situations where they're going to say one start, a few weeks, oh, a month and a half, oh, we should have put him on the 60-day DL?
I think that's the biggest reason that they will try to hold on to all of this pitching in one way or the other. Because, I mean, you mentioned it, but we went from, oh, he'll just miss one start, it's not a big deal, to, it's going to probably be like 4 starts. Mm-hmm. And that happened without, you blink and you look up and all of a sudden Carlos Martinez is out for 4 consecutive starts at best, it seems like. So I think I would be hesitant to really buy into any guarantee with Martinez at this point, because even if he does come back, we saw Adam Wainwright come back off the DL but actually be more injured than he was when he went on the DL. So I don't know. I think this is sort of the trend that we've seen for a long time with the way that the Cardinals handle injuries. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's this way with every team, and I just see it more regularly with the Cardinals. But and I will say this. I think the Cardinals have been a bit more proactive this year in trying to get ahead of some of these injuries. We heard yesterday that Jordan Hicks hadn't responded particularly well to extended outings or, you know, back-to-back-to-back appearances. So he had a 12-pitch appearance on Saturday and then was done, which ended up maybe being the undoing of that game. But they're not because something's wrong now, but because they're trying to get out ahead of it to prevent something from being wrong in the future. And I think that's, at least from the outside, seems to be a little bit of a different tactic in trying to keep particularly some of these pitchers healthy. So maybe that's the case. Maybe it really isn't that significant. They're just being more cautious in order to avoid it becoming a larger problem in the future, so that you give him 10 to 14 days and you realize, okay, it wasn't that serious. Now he's good to go and he's going to be fine. I think that John Mozeliak has this recurring nightmare about losing starting pitchers, and that's why he tends to stockpile them, and for good reason. I mean, it's happened enough times that he probably has just this, you know, constant memory loop of all of the spring trainings where someone went down before they ever threw a pitch that mattered. So I don't know. I think that what happens with Carlos Martinez, this is going to sound super obvious, but has a direct impact on what will happen when Alex Reyes comes back, because if you can count on him, if you're confident in the health of his arm, then it allows you to look at one of those other guys in the rotation as a potential trade chip, as opposed to holding on to them as your backup plan.
Yeah, it is funny that you say that the Cardinals made a note that Jordan Hicks doesn't work well on back-to-back days, And he's
threw him back-to-back days?
Yeah, and it's four of the last five. And not only that, he went an inning and a third today. Which kind of raises another question to go along with that. Because you are right. I think that at times, like, at least say the right things, that they're trying to be proactive, they're trying to get these guys on the deal. There was a tweet out there today, and I don't know if it was accurate. I don't know if there was a miscommunication. But there was a tweet that said that Mike Maddux and company, including Mike Matheny, had a 120-pitch limit for Jack Flaherty today. If 120 pitches is the limit for a young arm, I think that there's something wrong, because that's about 20 pitches higher than you would expect. You know, we kind of thought that Mike Maddux was going to be this savior of the bullpen, the savior of arms and things of that nature, but if he's coming up with that, and again, like I said, this is what I saw, and I haven't seen any corrections, but there might have been, that it might have been like it was supposed to be 110 or whatever. It was also good to know that Jack Flaherty glared at him and got to go back out. Because, you know, far be it from an adult to be in the room on this dugout. I mean, it's... Oh, wait, no. Flaherty actually did throw 120 pitches today.
Yeah,
never mind.
And he did.
I didn't realize it was quite that high. So obviously that number was right, and this is kind of insane. Am I right? Or am I just... I mean, this is what happens. I'm in and out, and I'm looking like, oh, my goodness. Isn't this a little crazy? I mean, I know he was free and easy, two hits, 13 strikeouts. He obviously had the game going. There wasn't a lot of stress, but it still seems like a lot.
Yeah, it seems like a lot, especially for a rookie. It seems like a lot. I mean, I don't know when the last time was Adam Wainwright threw 120 pitches, like in a good year. That's a lot.
I mean, he
for
does
anybody.
That in, like, one inning now these days.
Right. Yeah. Sure. I mean, yeah. Well, that's a little, that's a little bit different.
Yeah, let's not do that.
Oh, it got dark again all of a sudden. No, it was a lot, and I think that there were a lot of people who were really surprised and not super thrilled that Jack went back out for the eighth inning. I like that the stare of a thousand angry poodles is the trick to get Mike Matheny to do what you want. I'm debating driving to Busch Stadium and shooting him dirty looks when he tries to put Greg Holland into a one-run game the next time and seeing if it works for real or if it's just a Jack Flaherty thing.
Talk to Mark.
Yeah, sorry. Bringing it down a few notches. No, but I think, you know, the whole pitch count thing seems like a pretty wide-ranging variable depending on the athlete, depending on the stress of the innings, depending on a lot of different things, and I'm certainly not in a position to make a declarative statement about what the limit should or shouldn't be. I know great baseball people who think pitch counts are dumb. I know people who think that they should be very heavily enforced. I'm not really sure where I come down on that issue, except to say there's such an emphasis on saving young pitchers' arms that in a 5-1 game, it seemed a little bit strange for Jack Flaherty to go back out in the eighth inning when he already had, I think he had like 107 pitches when he ended the seventh. So it wasn't like he was under 100 pitches and he just threw 20 pitches in the inning. You know, he was already there. So I think the other thing that came into play, though, is that the bullpen was pretty stretched. I think Mike Matheny after the game said that there were only three guys really available. There was Brett Cecil and Jordan Hicks, who kind of pitched to the limit they'd given him. And I don't remember, maybe Mike Myers was available for an inning. It would have been Brebbia, but they would have been pushing him for as much as he's pitched lately, too. So I think that's probably as much the reason that they allowed Jack to go back out there, but at the same time, it does leave me with a little bit of concern with how they plan to handle these young pitchers and their overall well-being as far as their future is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, granted, because of of what happened on Saturday, and we'll get to that a little bit. There may, you know, I'm sure they used a lot of different guys out there. But, you know, Tui has pitched, you know, for a guy that they continue to say that's going to stretch out, he's only pitched an inning the last couple of times out. You would have thought he could have gone back. Again, if Jordan Hicks can go out there for another inning in the third after pitching in 3 or 4 days, there's a lot of guys that you would think you would rather have out there. Because, again, you're trying to protect your arms. Again, I get it. This it may have been kind of jammed up. But you know what? The Cardinals have not been shy about going down and getting arms out of Memphis either. And it's a little surprising that they didn't, although I don't know. It's hard to remember who's there and who's not, but and maybe there's not an arm down there to go get, but it's a little surprising they didn't make a move on Saturday for a new arm on Sunday so that Jack Flaherty was protected. I don't know. Again, you kind of you feel like you may be picking nits a little bit, but anytime
120 is a lot.
Like you said, at 107 at the end of an inning, that makes sense for an arm like that. Again, he wasn't stressed too much. It was a game, although early on, again, it was a fairly close game. So that does feel like a lot more. And when you see that, and when you see how they use Hicks, that it does raise the question, you know, one, what is Mike Maddux doing? And two, all these young arms, all these guys, is Mike Matheny the guy we want, you know, dealing with them?
Yeah. Well,
I mean, that's kind of rhetorical. I don't know that you really want to get into that, but
is that a question you want me to answer? No, I think that we've been asking that question for a lot of years now, and I think I don't know that there's categorical evidence to suggest that. Well, I don't know. Seth Maness, Matt Bowman might be pretty categorical evidence as far as the overuse of pitchers, or even, you know, Trevor Rosenthal and the way that he went down last year. There are so many examples. I think that's why everyone's pretty worried about Jordan Hicks, and why I liked hearing that the medical staff was being a bit protective of him in not letting him go back out there day after day after day after day, like Mike Matheny tends to do. But I think it's easy to say that and then get into a game situation where you don't have a whole lot of other options, or it seems that way, and you go right back to the thing that's tried and true. And on the one hand, I can understand that. I mean, you know, the Cardinals bullpen has been such a strange puzzle to try to sort out the last couple of years, and maybe that's because Mike Matheny doesn't know how to use it. But you know, when you seem to have all these guys that should have particular roles and then they don't live up to that, subtly pointing at Greg Holland again, it makes that mix a little bit more complicated. When Bud Norris is the only guy that can get outs at the end of a game, your first reaction is, well, I guess he's going to get a 5-out save again because he's the only guy that can get outs at the end of the game. Now, that's a terrible long-term strategy, but in the moment, I can understand the tendency or the temptation to go back to what has worked, especially if it's the only thing that has worked. So, I don't know. I think there are enough arms in the bullpen. Mike Matheny talked today about how much more confident they feel in Mike Myers and how much better they feel about Tui earning some of those big game situations. And those are not things we've heard from him about those two in particular in the past. So maybe their performances have led to a little bit more confidence from the manager, which will lead to them being used a little more effectively. I don't know. But to get back to your maybe not so rhetorical question, I don't think that Mike Matheny gives people a lot of confidence in his ability to push the right buttons at the right time as far as the bullpen is concerned.
Well, we have danced around him enough, so maybe we should talk about the elephant in the room, that is Greg Holland. Again, he at times starts to look like the guy they paid for. He'll go through, you know, some games and although I'm pretty sure that he can't actually go through a game without walking somebody. At times he can get through. I mean, he ran from the beginning of May until these last two games that he's been out without scoring. Now, it was four innings, but no runs allowed. He's had a few other ones, but about the time you start to think he's got it figured out, you know, the game against Minnesota this week, where he gave up two runs in a third of an inning, and then yesterday's game where he gets two outs and then a walk, a triple, a double, and all of a sudden the game's lost. You know, I know that the last game of the season when he comes in, the guys on TV are going to say, you know, he didn't have a spring training, because that seems to still be brought up. But, you know, we are past that excuse now. I mean, we're in, you know, 12 and a third innings on the season, and 14, well, I mean, if you knew nothing else, 14 walks in 12.1 innings for a guy that's supposed to be a closer type, I think that tells you pretty much all you need to know. And, I mean, what do you do? I mean, I know that people are saying, oh, you cut him and all that kind of stuff. That's not going to happen, because the Cardinals are going to try to get as much as they can out of that $14 million they're paying him. But, I mean, how can you ever – I don't know what Greg Holland can do the rest of the year that'll give me enough confidence that he can actually pitch the ace, because I'll always be thinking that a blow up is coming.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, to clarify, not no. Not a proponent of just releasing players, just so we're clear. But I think, I don't know. One, I think you'd stop putting him in one run games. At least until he does more than, you know, pitch two consecutive outings that are pretty decent. You can't afford to put him in one game until you know that he's capable of working himself out of trouble, because he's going to get into trouble almost every time he's out there. And if he works out of it, great. But until you have confidence that he's going to do that more often than not, you can't put him in one run games. The second thing that I think needs to happen is that the leash has to be much shorter. We saw Gabe Kapler this weekend pull a pitcher after four pitches because he went out and walked the first batter that he faced, and Gabe Kapler pulled him out of game. I know that that's not the way that Mike Matheny thinks, especially as it pertains to a veteran reliever, but that is the kind of quick hook that I think the Cardinals have to have with Greg Holland, because I mean, they have to put him in there, right? They have to put him in games, whether it's a one-run game or a 12-run game. They've got to put him out there at some point to work through whatever it is that he has to work through that he's not going to do at the minor league level. So you've got to put him in games, and even if you only put him in blowouts for the next 3 weeks and he performs well, then you still have to start slowly moving him back into more important situations, because you need to fill that role if this bullpen is going to shape up like it's supposed to. But then when you do, the trigger has to be so much quicker for Mike Matheny, in my opinion. I mean, if he'd come out of the game after the walk, the Cardinals probably win that game. And I get that you want to try to let him work through it, but you've seen so many times that he doesn't, that at some point your management decisions, much like swapping Harrison Bader for Matt Carpenter against a lefty late in a game, your decisions have to be about the game, not about trying to get a guy right. There are only so many losses you can afford because you were trying to get a guy right, rather than managing to the situation that you're in at the moment. And that is why I don't think anyone trusts Mike Matheny with the bullpen, because he has not proven himself capable of managing to the moment as opposed to managing for the person.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this for 7 years, about his, you know, being the leader of men, which has become, you know, a kind of a derogatory slam on him since, you know, from the last few years. And I think the downside of that, it feels like, and again, we're not there, we don't know what Mike Matheny's doing, we don't blah, 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 nobody knows what Mike Matheny's doing, but it feels like, when you talk about stories like we just talked about with Jack Flaherty glaring at him and getting a chance to go back out there, when you've got, you know, situations where a pitcher will talk himself into staying in the game on the mound or whatever, it feels like Mike Matheny tries to manage people versus the game, which has its place perhaps, but in his view, it feels like, that it's whatever makes the people happy. Not necessarily what's best for them or what's best for the organization or whatever. It's whatever makes these people happy. You know, if they want to play, they're going to play. That's why Yadier Molina has played 174 games over the last, every year. That's why Jack Flaherty can, you know, give him that tough bulldog stare and, you know, he gets to go back out there. I don't know why, you know, I didn't know. I mean, when you look at him, Matt Bowman doesn't look like a guy that could stare him down, but I guess that maybe that's why Bowman gets to go out there all the time.
Deceiving.
Yeah, deceiving. I mean, you just, you know, just didn't know.
The 12-year-old face doesn't seem like one that can be intimidating.
But there does come a point. I mean, again, we have to remember, we always do, that there are people on the ends of these decisions, and I get that, and you're right, there's, that has to be taken into account, but there are times where you have to hurt feelings to win the ball game. I mean, that's just, unfortunately, part of the deal, and you hope that the player understands.
Here's the thing, I mean, I'm not a parent, I don't have kids, so I can only... So feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But if your kid only ever wants to eat ice cream for dinner, at some point, you might let them eat ice cream for dinner one night, but you're not going to let them do it every time just because it's what they want to do.
Right.
So when you are there to help them make those decisions to become better human beings, you're not going to just let them eat ice cream every night for the rest of their life just because they want to do it or because they glare at you when you try to take the spoon away. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very simplistic example, but the point remains that just because Matt Carpenter doesn't ever want to come out of a game doesn't mean that Matt Carpenter should never come out of a game. And if you're genuinely a leader of men, if you're genuinely the kind of leader that people respect, you can make those hard decisions and then go back to that guy that's probably going to be mad at you later and say, look, here's why I did what I did. I know you don't like it, but this is what's best for all of us. And they will learn to respect your ability to make difficult decisions, whether you like them for it or not in the moment. That's where I think this whole leader of men thing falls a little short from to those of us who look from the outside, because it doesn't seem like that's the kind of decision making that happens, where he can make a tough decision, but has the respect of those guys in the clubhouse to the extent that even if they don't like it, he's going to be able to make the decision that's best for the team, and then they'll all get over it and be happy that they won in the end.
Right. And, you know, again, and we've talked about this numerous times, to be that kind of leader, you also have to be consistent, and that's not always felt like he makes the same decisions for the same people. And I know there's other variables and things like that, but that seems to be the case. Now, talking about decisions, talking about various things of that nature, and Mike Matheny, I guess, in general, the Cardinals lost Paul DeJong this weekend. He took a pitch off of his hand that New York reviewed to make sure that he was hit, and then the doctor said, yeah, he was hit because he broke his hand. Surgery, a platen in it, he's out for quite some time, and we can talk about what the Cardinals need to do with Paul DeJong's spot in a moment, but I think what you and I were talking about earlier, the very noticeable thing was, and I mean, this was, as you said, back-to-back tweets, basically. I mean, it was right there in your timeline, and you see that John Mozeliak says, well, we're calling up Yairo Munoz, and he's going to play most of the time at shortstop. And then Mike Matheny says, Jed Jerko is going to play most of the time at shortstop. You know, I get that in the heat of the moment, maybe Mo and Matheny hadn't talked and hadn't sorted things out. But here we are 3 days later, and Jed Jerko has played shortstop twice, and Greg Garcia played today. Yairo Munoz, I think, pinch hit in a game somewhere along the way. I think if the team was struggling more, this would be a sign of dysfunction. Being that they're only a game and a half out, I don't know that it's been a big deal. But again, we have talked so much about how Matheny should be at least on a warm seat. To go out and, you know, see what your boss is saying and then do the opposite doesn't seem to be the best employment decision.
Suddenly this has turned into the let's talk bad about Mike Matheny hour, but...
Well, we don't usually do it, so we have a lot stored up.
It's true. I usually try to stay away from, you know, assuming too much about what does or doesn't go on in the clubhouse, because I think that gets, you get into pretty significant assumptions at that point that are not really beneficial. But in this case, it's not an assumption. It's right there for everyone to see. And there's part of me that just laughed because of this strange dynamic between John Mozeliak and Mike Matheny that we've talked about for a number of years, but I don't know that we've ever seen it quite as clearly and quite as instantly as we saw it in that case. And, you know, I would guess that you're probably right. It was just a matter of the two not having really discussed it. But to me, that doesn't really eliminate the problem, because communication within this organization has been a trend for the last several years now, whether it's the front office and their communication or lack of with players, or Mike Matheny's lack of communication with players. Earlier this year, there was a little bit of a dust up when Dexter Fowler found out about a change in his role because of a text message before the game, which is something we've heard about before, that Mike Matheny will send a text message of the lineup to the players, which seems strange to me because why don't you just talk to them face to face, but whatever. But this is the most dramatic we've seen of that complete opposite perspective between John Mozeliak and Mike Matheny. And ultimately, Mike Matheny, to this point, has gotten his way. And at some point, you know, John Mozeliak has said time and time again that he might create the roster, but he lets Mike Matheny fill out the lineup card every day, and he doesn't try to tell him who to play and when to play them and all of that. In this, it seemed much more like he had a pretty specific plan that was not shared by the manager. And I don't, you know, make your case for Jed Jerko or Gerald Munoz all you want. That's not really the point. The point is that there seems to be such a difference between what these two have in mind that I can't imagine trying to have a conversation, that actually accomplishes anything when they seem to be coming at it from such a starkly different perspective.
Yeah, it is weird. And I don't, I mean, we'll see. And, you know, maybe Mo will and Gersh will kind of get with Matheny, and maybe they have, and maybe Matheny argued for this, and they'd say, you know, okay. But it does continue to feel like, to me, Mo is continuing to give Matheny rope to see what he does with it, if he makes a noose or, you know, or something else. But I think there comes a point where they're going to say, look, you're going to run this team this year, and if it doesn't work, then you're going to have to answer for it, because there's nobody left. You know, all the coaches except for John Mabry have changed, and, you know, there was some discussion earlier in the week, or there's been discussion many a time, on whether that may be a mistake. Maybe there should be something different there. Beating up on the Phillies this weekend might have calmed that down a little bit. I think there's it feels like, and again, it's just what we see, but it feels kind of like, you know, okay, Mike, you want 13 pitchers. Okay, Mike, you want to do, you know, you want Jed Jerko to play shortstop. Okay, but we're noting all this. And, you know, come the end of the year, you better be able to defend this or there's going to be consequences again. So I don't know. We have seen Jed Jerko play shortstop for two of those games, and who knows what we'll see the rest of this coming week, who will be playing. But, you know, Jed Jerko hit pretty well against the Phillies. Jed Jerko also has problems in the field with the Phillies. And some of that was him. Some of it might have been, you know, there was one play, the Phillies scored on it, where he, yeah, there was a double play ball that he threw that apparently, I didn't see, I was listening to it, not seeing it, but that Jose Martinez probably should have corralled. But that kind of brings me to a point that I made with messaging my other co-host, Alan Medlock, over on Miami Mutual. there's only so many positions you can sacrifice defense for hitting at at a single time. And it feels like you can do it at first or you can do it at short, but you can't really do both. And the Cardinals are trying to. Is that fair, or is it just, you know, maybe Jerko just needs a little bit more time because he hadn't played there in a while?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he was ever really great there, so it's not as if we're not as if a return to form is going to be that inspiring as far as his ability defensively at shortstop. There's a reason that he's had his greatest success not at shortstop. He's a great third baseman, and he's proven that, and he's made some terrific plays when he's had the opportunities this year. He's not a great shortstop, and that's something the Cardinals are going to have to justify or balance between Jed Jerko, who can hit, and Jairo Munoz, who, well, I don't know that he's a gold glover, but he can play a little bit of shortstop. So, but you're right. The fact that the Cardinals have sacrificed defense for offense at multiple positions this year. I mean, we're talking about Jose Martinez at first, but also to some degree, Matt Carpenter at third. I mean, that's not, he's not going to win a gold glove as a third baseman either, especially if the shoulder ends up being re-aggravated at any point this season. And then you throw Jed Jerko in there at shortstop, and you've got three of your four guys on the infield really playing out of position. There are people who will argue that defense is overrated and that if they can score a bunch of runs, it won't really matter. But when you start losing one-run games and you have multiple errors that cost multiple runs, then you can start pointing to the lack of defensive stability as a reason that you're losing games.
Yeah.
Just like, I think you have to have a short leash with Greg Holland. I think you sort of have to take that all into account defensively as well.
Yeah, it's, there's not any easy answers because there isn't a shortstop in this organization. You know, like I said, Munoz may be the closest thing, but I don't think, you know, his glove has never been his strong suit either. I mean, when he played there earlier in the year, he seemed okay, but, you know, everybody was excited about him because he was hitting in the spring, not because he was fielding. So does this mean, and this kind of maybe ties back to what we're talking about with all the pitchers, does this mean the Cardinals need to make some sort of move? And if they do, they would think they'd need to make it soon because it kind of defeats the purpose to make it like 5 days before DeJong comes back. But, and I'm not talking, you know, everybody wants to talk about Manny Machado, and that's not happening. But even if it's just some sort of, you know, capable major league shortstop, it kind of feels like they kind of need to start looking outside the organization to get one of those, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately it will determine, or it will be determined for whatever the time frame ends up being for Paul DeJong, once they get a clearer picture of that. But I mean, if you're talking 8 weeks, that's a lot of games, man, and that's a lot of opportunities to move up in the standings, to push yourself towards the postseason, or to make multiple errors a game and cost yourself multiple runs. You know, I think on the one hand, if everyone starts firing cylinders defensively, if Matt Carpenter really is back, if Dexter Fowler gets going, if Ozuna can figure out what's going on with his swing or with his approach, and you have the offensive firepower that you're supposed to have even without DeJong, if Adi comes back and is able to contribute, the offense at shortstop might not be as big of a deal. If you have someone that can manage the position defensively, you may be able to just sort of wait around until DeJong comes back. I think the hesitation for John Mozeliak will be Paul DeJong is the guy that they have kind of locked in for the future, so they're not going to want to bring anyone in that will end up fighting for playing time the way that Jed Jerko is right now, or he was before Paul DeJong went. So I think it's complicated if you're looking at bringing in someone long term, but if you can bring someone in that's a legitimate major league shortstop without giving up too much for the sake of a rental, that definitely has to be on their radar. And I wouldn't put it past Mo to go out and bring in some wily veteran that you think can play for a couple of months. We've seen him pull that card before, and you know, it's worked a time or two. I mean, Rafael Furcal worked out all right that year, so mm-hmm. I don't know. I haven't given it enough thought to put any names to the possibilities, but the longer DeJong is out and the more you see Jurco struggle to be a legitimate major league shortstop, the more I think you have to consider at least taking a look at who might be available.
Yeah, I think that's where they've got to kind of look for, because I just don't see this patchwork thing clicking. And I think it's going to cost more games than we'd like over this stretch. And like I said, especially if it's close to 2 months, or we're talking to the All-Star break for Paul DeJong, it could be a problem to try to cover that. Now, that doesn't mean the Cardinals won't try, because they very well probably will. But I think it's kind of an issue. We've run a bit long because we got talking about Mike Matheny. But before we finish up, I think we do need to maybe tackle a little bit of another good problem to have, and that is Tyler O'Neill. Tyler O'Neill came up when DeJong and Matt Bowman, unsurprisingly, was put on the disabled list, which means the Cardinals are running with a little fewer pitchers than normal, but that's another topic for another time. He got his first hit on Friday night. He got his first home run Saturday. Hit another one today. Obviously, we know what the power is like, because he's hitting home run, it felt like, every day down in Memphis. But with two home runs in 2 days, it was fun. Somebody pointed out that, you know, Marcell Ozuna has yet to hit a home run at Busch Stadium in many more at-bats than Tyler O'Neill, who now has two of them. Does this become what are they going to do? I mean, they'll have five outfielders for a while. Harrison Bader has played well. You know, Dexter Fowler has struggled. Kind of start to think maybe he's coming around, but you know, again, even if he's not, you're not going to bench him full time. Obviously, you don't bench Marcell Ozuna. He's going to play a lot, and Tommy Pham is Tommy Pham. It feels like this is another situation where O'Neill's going to wind up back in Memphis at some point in time, but I don't know. I mean, what do we do?
I mean, outfield is another position where we've known for a while that the Cardinals were going to run into this position, where there are just too many guys to play the spots that are available. So I think I'm really hammering home this Mike Matheny thing tonight, but if I had confidence that he could manipulate an outfield puzzle with multiple people more effectively, then I would say, yeah, there's a way to make it work with the guys that you have there, to get everybody playing time, to keep everybody fresh, to give them a couple of consecutive days off when they're in a little bit of a funk. I just don't know that we've seen any indication that he's able to pull the right strings and make that happen. So when that's the case, someone like Tyler O'Neill, who probably needs to play more regularly than Harrison Bader, is going to end up back in Memphis with the bats. He can get that playing time and stay ready whenever the Cardinals need him, even if it's just for a time.
Yeah, a five-man outfield is going to be tough for even a managerial, you know, superstar, if you will. Just to get that kind of time. I mean, you don't usually see that. You see, you know, three, maybe a four, then that fifth guy is the guy you never want to really see, but on getaway days and a pinch hit every once in a while. So to have five legitimate starters is a difficult road to hoe for anybody, but,
Tyler O'Neill just needs to be stopped in the next 2 days.
Yeah, I don't see how that's a problem. You know, it can't be that hard, you know. That would solve everything. So, yeah, it should be fun. I hope that the Cardinals will have him up there, and I hope they'll get some more at bats. I mean, again, with this offense, you know, we've seen Matt Carpenter start to come around now, and we saw, you know, a 12-run game, a 6-run game. Cardinals scored 5 today, so they did some scoring, and today even against a very good pitcher, the the Phillies ran out. But you could still use that long ball that O'Neill brings, at least on a somewhat of a regular basis. So, be kind of interesting to watch over the next few weeks. The Cardinals don't have another interleague stretch for a while, or at least not against teams, they have Kansas City come in this, tomorrow, but, you know, obviously don't get to use a DH there. You don't get to use a DH again until, well, not in June either, so it's a few months away before they can do that. So we'll see. Cardinals do have the Royals, and they go to Pittsburgh for three for a series that is going to probably tell us a lot about this team, given how badly they played in Pittsburgh last time. So it should be an interesting week and plenty for us to talk about next time. Hopefully not as much about the manager. We'll try not to do that again. But sometimes, you know, you just got to get it out. So, so anyway, till next time, that's Tara and I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.